Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Ron Meyer and Mark Reeder.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Welcome to the world of mystery. Mystery that involves so much phenomena that one cannot actually pinpoint at various times if it's real or if it's all simply in our imagination. We have two guests this evening, Ron Meyer and Mark Reeder, who have had a quest over the past several years to delve into the mysteries of life, just to see if they can uncover some truth to it and or evidence. Ron Meyer owns a film production company called Centra Communications. He has founded and directed feature films, including the feature film for Discovery Communications called Legend of the Spirit Dog. He is the author of two novels with Mark Reeder, and with two other novels, their latest being Aliens 2035, The End of Technology. Recently, he produced the number one streaming documentary series on Amazon Prime about serial killers. As a follow-up to the highly successful Amazon Prime series Chasing Bigfoot, he's produced in an award-winning documentary feature called The Bigfoot Alien Connection Revealed. This movie has garnered over 7 million views on many streaming platforms. New movies released in 2022 are The Paranormal Mind, Lifting the Veil to a Greater Reality, Alien Contact in the Rockies, and Aliens and Nukes, The Mario Wood Story. Now let's turn our attention to Mark Reeder. Mark has worked as a writer and associate producer for the video production company Century Communications. His educational programs, Hispanic Achievement in America and Women's Achievement in America, have appeared on PBS National Television. He and Mark together collaborate in bringing forth to us very interesting shows, new concepts, and of course, evidence that one simply cannot deny. Please welcome to the show this evening, Mark Reeder and Ron Meyer. Well, good evening, gentlemen, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Nice to have both of you. So it's been a while since I've had a pairing on the show, and I think that this is going to be quite an interesting one because the gentlemen that have come to us this evening have quite extensive, accomplished backgrounds in what they do. So in just a moment, we're going to learn just a little bit more about what they're up to and where they plan to go from here. So let's start, as usual, with the most common question I always ask. Where did this all begin for you? And I know that since I'm dealing with two gentlemen here, I think I'm going to start with Ron. And then after Ron, Mark, you take the reins from there and we'll go from there. So, Ron, go back as far as you can and tell everybody, where did your interest in either extraterrestrial, paranormal, cryptids, whatever. Where did it all begin for you?
So it goes back to when I was young. And Mark and I have a very similar sequence of events. We're both what you would call experiencers. That's a new term that everybody's using now. And that goes way back. My first And we both had a strong interest in devouring science fiction. My first unusual experience was perhaps a UFO when I was sitting on top of my garage with my homemade telescope, and something like would be a UAP might have showed up. But from there, we kind of diverged. I went in a scientific direction. I was doing behavioral cybernetic research. And then I flipped over to doing filmmaking since the 70s. And I've been doing it ever since. But he and I then met in a martial art called Aikido. Mm-hmm. And Aikido is kind of a spiritual practice, or can be. And that opened doors for us. And then we began working and writing together. Mm-hmm. So I was then hired in my business to do a series on Bigfoot, the phenomenon of Bigfoot, before it was really big. And when I did the series, I knew that people were having legitimate experiences. I could tell that by the way they reacted and so on. But I was never convinced it was an ordinary, either unknown human kind of creature or some ape-type creatures. It just didn't make sense to me with my science background. But then one of the guys I was interviewing said, I think it's paraphysical. It's associated with aliens. And that sent me on like, wow, that's interesting. That takes me back to the science fiction stuff I sort of read. And so Mark can tell you his from where we diverged when we were young people after reading science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we get to Mark, I have one question for you that I think that prompted me in the beginning here. So when you were on your garage with your homemade telescope and you saw this UAP, can I ask where you lived at the time, what state you lived in at the time?
Yeah, not far from you, Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah, which is close to Green Bay.
Yep.
And from Green Bay.
And how old were you approximately when you saw this?
I would say I was however old you are when you're a freshman in high school.
Okay. And then what was your initial reaction to it? Were you in awe, or did you just think it might have been just something else?
I was thoroughly excited because I wanted contact.
Mm-hmm.
I'd made some weird kind of UFO detector and put it in our attic and everything. So I was quite aware of all this already in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other question I would have would be, this includes even my own experiences, are you aware at all, or have you ever been aware of whether or not you have had any kind of an abduction or a visitation per se, like a personal visitation, other than just seeing that, where it may have woken something up inside of you? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm also a long-term meditator, and I've had multiple non-dual experiences, which is when the self disappears. There's no self. And Mark and I do practice flow coming out of our martial arts, where we quite frequently get into a flow state.
Yeah.
And there's just doing, there's no doer. And of course, if you're fighting somebody, that's a huge advantage because you always win.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's hard to explain it to other people. One of my goals, and maybe Mark's as well, is to join the meditative practices, the Eastern religions, with these other anomalous experiences that are life-changing, such as a contact or an abduction or a seeing of Bigfoot. So that's one of our primary goals, and see if we can bring these people together, these two camps of ultimate change of what a human is about and what life is really about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mark, you're up. So where did this all happen? When did this start for you, and how did you become so intrigued and interested in what you do?
Well, my journey is a kind of long roundabout trip. Mm-hmm. I like Ron, I grew up in a near the woods and at the edge of the city. My parents were very practical people. My dad was a doctor, and we made our own bleach, our own soap. We just did everything ourselves. But my dad also was interested in science fiction. So at age six, I used to sneak into my parents' bedroom, take his science fiction books, and go back to my room and read them. Mm-hmm. So I had an interest in science fiction and fantasy when I was quite young. However, the practical part of life really stuck with me more than anything. Until I met Ron. Mm-hmm. And Ron, I feel he's been my mentor as a writer and in martial arts. He's been my mentor as well. But in meeting Ron, that's when my journey toward this area of the paranormal began. Though I have to say that for many years I suppressed the things that had happened to me when I was younger. There were a lot of interesting things that happened, but I just tossed them off as either being coincidences or overactive imagination. But meeting Ron about 40 years ago in the Aikido class, we became fast friends. We started working together. And then I'd say the turning point was my wife passed away 20 years ago, and I was devastated by that. Mm-hmm. But at one point, Ron came up to me and said, Debbie, my wife's name was Debbie, said, Debbie came to me in a dream and said that you need to take care of yourself, that you're going to be okay. And that was so profoundly opening for me that from that moment on, I started, though I still had a skeptical point of view, I started embracing the paranormal much more eagerly than I ever had before. And since that time, like I said, Ron and I have rewritten at least a dozen books together, and generally science fiction novels, but we've also written three or four nonfiction books together, and we managed to work quite well together.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, he's being modest. He's a remote viewer as well.
Are you really?
I have done remote viewing, yes. It at the time, this was many years ago when I started, at the time I thought, I'm just having these extremely lucid dreams. But later on, I had an experience with one of my martial arts teachers who he told me I could no longer come visit him when he was training. The problem with that was I was living in Sioux City, Iowa at the time, and he was living in Redwood City, California. So that's when I realized that I was not just dreaming.
So how are you coming to him? Did he, was he sensing you? Was this telepathic? What was it exactly? How were you coming to him?
Well, I would do the remote viewing, and I would watch him train at his dojo in Redwood City. And then I would go out and visit him, and I would be practicing the things that I saw him practicing. And at one point, he said, I know I've never shown this to you before. How do you know this? Mm-hmm. And he answered his own question. Then he suddenly realized that I was remote viewing him. He said, you can't come and watch my secret practices anymore. And I actually agreed that since I had not been doing it on purpose, like, you know, I'm going to go steal his techniques.
Right.
I just happened to be interested in what he was doing, and the remote viewing, I thought it was a dream at first. And so, but here I am watching him. And so I actually acceded to what he wanted, and I stopped going to visit him. Instead, I did remote viewing and other things.
You know, it's kind of interesting about that is, is this something that you came, let's see, the new term that I'm using right now is like an invitation to an awakening, which is something that I've been going through all my life in terms of different types of elevations or being evolved into being able to do certain things or sense things. Right now, I'm on a very strong telepathic path just to myself. So my question to you is, when did you, Mark, start noticing that you came into this awakening of your remote viewing, or were you trained in a certain way to be able to tap into that?
Well, I was never trained. I just let me put it a different way. So in the book that we wrote, the latest book that we wrote, we talk about paranormal experiences as ways of opening people up to their inner selves, to their inner powers. And in the next book we're working on, we'll talk a little bit more about those superpowers. And we're not talking about Marvel or DC comic book heroes. We're talking about things like remote viewing or telekinesis, that everybody has the ability, in my opinion, everybody has the ability to learn those things. But in my case, I just happened to do it. I wasn't in particular trying to do it or being trained to do it. I just fell into it. And like I said, at first, I just thought I was doing some very interesting dreaming. It was later on that I discovered that I was actually doing remote viewing.
So one of the things that I have been trying to self-discovery in myself for the last few years, because I've had all kinds of situations occur too, I can agree or I can relate to you saying I fell into it. I have been invited to fall into it for quite a few years. I just finally woke up to understand what I was falling into. Right now, I'm very telepathic, especially with a connection with somebody 4,000 miles away. I can't remote view this individual, but I can feel and sense this individual down to the letter. And so it's kind of interesting when you say that, because I had written an article in one of the paranormal magazines about being a beacon, and that I felt that my abilities came to me because I had a lot of trauma in my life. And because of that, I felt like it opened up something unusual in my brain waves or whatever, and just kind of opened me up, and I'm just opening up even more so. I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen the same question here. At what point in your life did you feel like you became the most open to these types of energies?
I'm sorry, Ron, I stepped on your line there.
A couple days ago.
Yes,
most open. So our theory that we derive on this comes a lot from our flow experiences, in which it's a letting go process that's involved, rather than the new age self-improvement processes, which is a doing.
Yeah.
And so the letting go process at least tilts the scale to have these experiences, because we're getting rid of stuff and becoming more aligned with what is, if you want to say it this, or the greater reality or the greater truth. And so it's an ever, the more we practice, the more it's available to us. And so it almost always results from, so when you have these anomalous things that happen suddenly, it tears away all these things. And for a moment, the veil is lifted, or whatever metaphor you want to use. So it's, for me, it's never ending. It keeps getting better.
Mm-hmm. You're evolving. Yep. Mark?
Well, I think what you're talking about, or at least my interpretation of what you're talking about in being open, is that we have these latent abilities, and we may or may not be aware of them. Some people are, perhaps they're born aware of them. Others of us, we just sort of fall into them, as I said, but they're there. And mostly what happens is our egos, that's one way to put it, or the way our brain continually tells us where we are. It's always telling stories about, like right now, my brain is telling me the story that I'm sitting in a chair, I'm being interviewed by Kelly Schultz, and my friend Ron Meyer is there. So my brain is continually telling this story and reinforcing it. Mm-hmm. And what Ron was talking about in terms of the flow state, when we get the ego, the brain out of the way, then these latent abilities actually have a process or a way of coming into the present. Mm-hmm. When Ron says a couple of days ago is when he was the most open, I absolutely believe him, because if we practice this flow state enough on a daily basis, then every day is sort of a wider opening, a wider awakening. But it's also easy to regress. It's also easy to get back into the head saying, well, now I'm sitting in my chair and I'm writing this novel. I am writing this novel, which actually, when we think about it, it's a very nice and egotistical thing to say, I am writing this novel. But if I think about it and I look back at, say, this book that Ron and I wrote, mm-hmm. I don't think I wrote a word of it. I think that my brain was open, I was in the flow state, and when Ron and I were collaborating on it, it just appeared for us, mm-hmm. because we were out, our egos and our brains were out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So in answer to your when were you the most open, I'd have to agree with Ron. Pretty much probably in somewhere in the last few days, I've achieved a feeling of more openness than I ever have previously.
All right. So let me jump in here and throw something past both of you and see what your thoughts are about this. So I interview a lot of guests on my show. I recently talked with somebody who had mentioned to me that there's something going on out in the, I don't call it the universe, you know, for everyone to understand here right now, where the, I don't know if it's the electromagnetic waves or what, are becoming, they're very strong. Sometimes they're almost like a solar flare of that sort. And then when these things start hitting and pulsating and doing whatever they're doing, there's been reports from me, including my own self, that I have been noticing things that seem a little bit more, I don't know if I use the word coincidental, but, and not even surprising, because I live the paranormal on a daily basis, whatever that looks like. But I'm wondering, the word that's coming to my mind right now is the ability to channel, something that we may not or may become aware of, that might actually be speaking to either of you, including myself. I'm going to give you an example. We talked before the show about us writing our books, and I can pound out a book very quickly if I am in the right mood and in a right state of mind, and the words just flow right into me. And where am I getting these words from? I don't know. Sometimes I look at my work and I go, that's pretty good. I wish I knew who actually wrote that. And so you guys, put that book up again, would you, Mark? You had it in your hand a second ago. So Mark and Ron just wrote this book probably, what, a year ago or so? And this one you mentioned too just flowed into you. Tell me a little bit more about that experience of writing that book in such a way where it just all came together like that. Do you feel like you were channeled by anything?
Yes, we do. Yeah. It just occurred. We'd get together, we'd write something, we'd read it, and in a real sense, I would not say I really wrote that book, and I think Mark would agree with it too. But putting my finger on what it was that was writing it, what needed it to appear, for who was ever going to read it, that's a little more mysterious to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think trying to put a name to whatever we were channeling would automatically take us out of the flow state. The ego would then be involved again. The brain would be trying to understand what's going on. So Ron and I occasionally joke about the muse coming in and helping us write. But really, it's just getting out of the way and letting the words be on the paper or on the computer screen, wherever they're going to be. Now, that doesn't mean that Ron and I don't sit down and talk about this experience of having the words come out. And we may even fine-tune something in terms of an experience that we've had or a historical phenomenon. Mm-hmm. A really good one is Francis of Assisi. We mentioned it in this book. Francis of Assisi gets meets a person on the road, and this encounter changes his life forever. So those sort of things happen all the time to individuals. Sometimes we're aware of them, sometimes we're not. But as far as writing the book is concerned, I would say that we simply got out of the way.
Mm-hmm. I want to show you something. Can we find, hold on a second here. I don't have my book in front of me, but I have a, I'm talking at a conference shortly, and I've got this as part of it. I wanted to show you something unusual that happened to me. Let me see if I can get this up here. There, kind of. See that image there? That's one of my, it's one of my books that I just did, started in January, ended, published it in March. It is a whodunit murder mystery book. I have never had a grand interest in whodunit mysteries. Something came to me one day, I can't explain it to you, and channeled me or said to me, I think you should do a whodunit murder mystery book. Now, anybody who knows me knows that that would be like the last thing that would ever come about for me, right? So I said to my whatever, I mean, telepathic to whatever, I said, how am I going to write this book when, number one, I don't know a clue about how I'm going to write it. Number two, the stories that will go in it. Number three, I'm not a accomplished whodunit writer, that kind of thing. And what I felt was, it'll just come to you. I'll help you with the words. I'll help you with the flow. Now, maybe that's just my own organization and intuition talking to me, but I wrote that book in about a month and a half and published it on Amazon in March. And it's doing all right. I mean, I sell it in tourist shops too. But the thing is like, everyone still looks at me like, who are you? And I sometimes I say to myself, I wish I knew who I was, because I have different sides of me depending on whatever I'm living. And so I want to throw this back to both of you right now, because you just mentioned something a moment ago, Mark, that things change my life all the time. And things come into my life all the time. And sometimes I'm being channeled, and we'll have a discussion about me going into casinos at another time and being able to pick 19 IRS jackpot machines out of 23 visits in the last few years, and my being able to channel something or telepathically hear something to bring me to the right machine. It's very interesting. So let's go back to you guys for a moment here. And I want to ask, out of all the experiences that you've had in some way, whatever it was, what was the most compelling moment that actually, per se, might have changed your viewpoint or your just changed you in general, bringing you to another level of awakening? Let's start there. Ron, do you want to start?
You want a big one?
Sure. No, it's no problem. Go ahead.
So I helped save Tibet.
Continue.
You know, Tibet is this, it's one of the centers of one of the sects of Buddhist religion, right?
Yeah.
So I've always been driven by synchronicity. So the opportunity arose to be one of the first film crews to go to China in the 80s. And I was at it, we were following a string quartet that was performing. It all came together in a remarkable way. And so the ultimate chance to go to Tibet with my partner at the time, who was a Buddhist here in Boulder, we jumped at the opportunity. And so I was at a Taoist temple. We were filming there in China. And I had this profound dream that I knew everything, a total awakening. And I was told by some sort of master who appeared to me. Okay. And I woke up and I immediately forgot it all. You know, it was like all dreams. Mm-hmm. But eventually we ended up in Tibet. And I actually went there with Jimmy Carter, you know, who was the president.
Yeah.
We traveled on the same plane and got to know each other a bit. And we arranged to go into the Jokon, which is the most sacred of the buildings, at least for that sect of Buddhism. And who was there greeting me? The guy in my dream, the head of the monastery there. And he immediately took me aside and said I was a lama too, and showed me the bones of Siddhartha, the actual Buddha and everything. And then he said, "Well, you got to save Tibet." And I was like, "Oh, that's strange." And then it occurred to me, I knew what I had to do. I had done an earlier film on saving cranes of the world, these big birds, beautiful birds.
Yeah.
That and there's that turned out that there's a non-migratory crane species in Tibet. And these two young ornithologists who had established the Crane Foundation said, "Oh, we got good contact with the Chinese. They let us in, but they won't let us into Tibet because it's an autonomous province. So, but if you can get an invite, we'll let you get in."
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what I had to do. I ran around that city and finally found what might be called the mayor of Lhasa. And he put together an invitation to the boys, and they got in there and got eyes on what was going on, and not only the crane, but what the Chinese were doing to the Tibetans. So how's that? I was a vessel. By the way, Eckhart Tolle, you know who he is?
Mm.
Eckhart Tolle is a great spiritual leader, kind of a funny little German guy. Anyhow, many of your listeners will know who he is. He's kind of got this new idea that you get into the present and whatever is on the other side can flow for you and use you.
Yeah.
So that's an example of that. I was used.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
That blew me away, by the way.
But the other thing interesting about it is, I don't know if you've ever asked the question to yourself, why? I know people do this all the time. Why me? Why me? Why am I the chosen one? Why me? That kind of thing. Have you ever come to any conclusions about why you? Did you have something going on at the time in terms of your filmmaking or whatever, where they felt that you would be the best person to select or pick for this mission? What are your thoughts? Why you?
That goes with the idea that there's a me to ask that question, and I don't think there is. In that sense,
mm-hmm.
I got to get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, but very compelling and interesting. Good, Mark.
When we're younger, and we're bringing our grades home from public school to our parents and everything, and you get an A in English or a B in history or something, you do well, and your parents say, "Oh, see, you're doing so well." From an early age, we're sort of in a culture that rewards the ego being as strong as it possibly can. And so any breakthrough past that in Western culture, especially, but I'll go to my hometown, Sioux City, Iowa, and heart of the Midwest. They don't call it the Corn Belt for nothing. I mean, there's a lot of what people might think of as corny values, but they're incredible family values as well. They're not, it's just not stupid things. They're actually very strong family-oriented values. And one of those values is what can you bring to the family to make the family stronger?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sort of culturally told to become as strong an individual as we possibly can, whether it's sports or your mind or your brain or whatever. So breaking through that ego is really difficult. And so it's kind of like we say, well, who chose me? Well, I must be the chosen one. And I think I don't think there are any real chosen ones. It sounds nice. What I think it is actually the individual or the person or the one, and I'm going to come back to this, I've said it a couple of times, and I'm going to say it a third time, that person gets out of the way. They're not the chosen one. You could call them a vessel, you can call them channeling or whatever you want, but that actually, they're not the one doing what's going on. there's a higher power, if you want to call it a higher power, a voice from the other side, which is one of my experiences, a voice from the other side telling me that I needed to do this one thing. And since it involves other people, I'm going to be very vague about it. And so I did that, and we all survived as a result. But it's not me being the chosen one in this situation. It's me getting out of the way and listening. Mm-hmm. And I had a very similar experience. This one I can talk about. After my wife passed away, I've been a long time runner and swimmer, and I was out for a long distance run, which was going terribly. I can run six at that time in my life. I could run a sub 6 minute miles several at a time. I could just run very well. But I was probably running 12 minute miles, and my heart was just pounding with every single step. And at one point, this voice comes into my head and says, "Choose. Do you want to live or do you want to die? If you decide to die, you'll die right now. And if you decide to live, then you should live, and your wife will be happy that you lived." And I chose the second one. And at the moment that I made that choice, everything went away. The pounding heart went away. My breathing became normal, and I ran normally. So I could have not listened at all and just run myself into a heart attack and died, which was an option. But the voice, my ego or whatever it was so tired, it got out of the way and allowed the voice to come in. But there's no chosen one. That voice didn't make me a chosen one. That voice just simply spoke to me. So that's my interpretation of that, getting the ego out of the way so there isn't really a chosen one. That's how you come up with all these religions in the world. You get a chosen one that leads the religion. And we all know the benefits as well as the hazards of being a chosen one.
Unless we're all chosen ones.
That's something we're exploring in the new book, is can we all be chosen ones?
Oh, yeah. Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for some reason, I don't know. I wasn't planning to ask you that question, but it's like, isn't it interesting how we're all kind of connecting here right now with our thoughts? The chosen one. Do you know who that I get a lot of teasing on my end, and people that do not know me or people have read one chapter in one of my books would find it interesting, but I've always been kind of marked as, are you familiar with the TV show, The Ten Commandments?
No. I think there's a bunch of them that have been done.
The Ten Commandments with that plays all the time with what's his name, Charlton Heston.
Oh, the movie. Oh yeah, I've seen the movie several times.
Mm-hmm. I'm Moses.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. This is weird, but it's interesting. So there's a kind of a laugh that goes on with people that know me, that they always think that I. Not resemble, but per se indirectly resemble Moses in that movie, okay? And how odd that I was having what I believe to be extraterrestrial visitations, because I had a hand mark show up on me, which I talk all the time about extensively, and couldn't figure out where this hand mark came from, and was having visitations in places and cleansings and healings that should have went to my demise. But anyway, I went to have a regression done, and how strange and how odd that the individual would actually bring me back to a past life memory instead of regressing me to the point where I could tell whether or not I had an abduction. The person regressed me to the point where I actually had a past life memory. And I started describing the memory and came down to the conclusion in the end that I had some type of an unusual association with Moses. And so I described in the what I saw and everything, and you name it, okay? And of course, I'm very much in tune with what shows on TV the next day. But on TV the next day, call it perhaps my ability to foresee something, but this scene that I had in my regression to the letter, to the detail, was literally showing on TV, even down to how the fire was placed. And it was, of course, the Ten Commandments with Moses. Now, am I Moses? No. Am I the chosen one? No, I'm a strong personality leader. For some reason, I feel like I can run ahead of the group if there is trouble, and people always look to people. Have you ever found, between both of you, have anyone ever looked to either of you, either in the leader capacity or the one that's going to somehow get you out of a situation? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I founded a group here where I live called the Mapleton Home Association, and I like to tell this story because we had several homeowner meetings, and I was taking notes at one of the meetings, and I had excused myself to go to the bathroom. When I came back, everybody chose me to be president of the association in my absence. Since then, a lot of people come up to me. The association's now 27 years old, and they come up to me and they ask me on their behalf and on behalf of other residents to help them out with issues and where we live. So yeah, I have had that experience, and it's quite flattering. It's quite flattering to have people think of you as being a problem solver or the smartest guy in the room. But as my dad and Ron also reminded me, said, the smartest guy in the room is the guy who listens.
Yes, that's correct. Ron, how about you? Anything?
No. In fact, I'm probably the other way around.
They run from you, Ron? Is that what it is? They say, I don't want this guy. We're going to run from this guy. No, do they not really elevate you up to that type of leader position, or do they utilize you in a different way to accomplish what they need?
When I feel people projecting on me in this way, I don't like it for whatever reason. And I've talked to a few other people who excel in this area, and they've had the same response too. And I haven't really dug deep into it, but Mark and I have been playing around with the idea of that we actually are a complex intelligence as we exist in the world. Mm-hmm. That we have many different voices, and some of them are very powerful at given times to solve problems. So there's no one thing that's me. So I probably have a leadership voice, and I probably have one that plays a big role, which is the non-leadership voice. So it's not as simple me that we always talk about, the I. As far as I can see, I think there's great truth in that.
Yeah.
And when people get stuck with that, then they often aren't getting their best results when they need them.
Yeah, I agree. We all play a role when we need to play a role, as long as we're not being completely taken advantage of, per se. I want to switch this conversation to this book of yours a little bit, because I want people to take note of it. Let's see if I can get it in here, if they can see this.
I can hold it up. I can hold mine.
Could you guys hold yours up, because there you go. Thank you. So this is one of your most, thank you. I want people to really seriously consider getting this book. It's an easy read. I don't read books very often unless I'm really, really into the subject matter. And this was a very easy to read, understandable book, but very fascinating, with a lot of good evidence in it as well. And I would like you guys, I don't know if either of you have a particular chapter you want to talk about or an incident that you may have had, but I think this is a good segue into kind of talking a little bit about some of the elements in that book that people can kind of grasp and think about here, especially if they're having any kind of paranormal / extraterrestrial, UAP, actual, a Bigfoot, of course, is what this is all about. And the alien connection, which it's also all about. So one of you start, and let's see where we can go from there.
Let me give a little background on it.
All right.
So when I did the movie, The Bigfoot Alien Connection Revealed, I came across a place that seemed to have multiple paranormal phenomena occurring over a period of time in one place, geographically speaking. And now the term paranormal hotspots is quite common in the vernacular.
Yeah.
But at that time, it wasn't quite so common. You know, of course, Skinwalker Ranch should be the prime example. Everybody knows about it. So it occurred to me, kind of as the scientist, and Mark and I talked about this, is is that really true? Is there a way we can explore that possibility that there are these places? And I always felt that what we should always do is find somebody in one of these places that's sort of already a conduit to what's going on there. That the human intelligence, it's kind of like the, you know, when people talk about ghosts in a house or something, or in an abandoned building, it's that ghost just sitting around for days and days and hoping somebody will come in the basement so they can say boo. I doubt it. So having an individual or multiple individuals who are also having some experiences in these places was critical. And we set about saying, well, can we find at least five of these places? And I convinced somebody to pay for to do a series on this, plus including the other things we had done, you know, previously in our movies, and see if this hypothesis would hold up. And basically it did. And the goal was to see if we could find at least three paranormal occurrences when we were there and document them that would validate to some degree that these paranormal hotspots exist. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the basis of the book. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, is there any one of these that fascinated you more in terms? Because then we organized and said, well, one commonality is we found portals in three of them or something like that. And another one, well, there were these kind of alien abductions, you know, and UFOs in another. Our chapters were organized around these different phenomena, and then we pointed them back to the places where they did occur. That's how the book's organized.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Well, I have to make a little bit of a disclaimer here, and that is that Ron is the person who goes out into the field mm-hmm. and does all the research. I sit back. I'm not as science-oriented as Ron is. We used to have a joke when we were writing science educational videos, is if Mark could understand it, then everybody else could understand it. And so my job sort of was as the skeptic. How does this sound? Does it sound so far-fetched that nobody would believe it? Or is there some sort of reality behind it that makes it believable? And that brings me to my favorite part, which is portals.
Yeah.
And we have a section in the book about where we talk about Einstein Rosenbridges and Jack Scudder, who's a plasma physicist at the University of Iowa, and how portals actually do exist. Now the question is, how do portals exist? Do they exist on an interdimensional plane? Do they exist like wormholes exist, taking us from one part of the galaxy to the next, to another part or another part of the universe? And so that, to me, portals to me are fascinating. And we'll do some more on the upcoming book. We'll talk some more about portals, but that's the part that really interests me.
I love portal situations. I had a guest on my show about two years ago, who talked about these disappearances in these national parks or wherever, and a couple people who actually experienced walking into a portal and being like literally like in a wilderness state of being for anywhere from 11 to 12, 13 days, and then they somehow managed to walk back out of this portal. And the portal I'm talking about is when people actually go in and then they disappear entirely, or they would, like in these cases, a couple people actually did manage to come out, but they didn't know they're in a portal. They just felt delusional, kind of delusional and kind of confused and whatever. And then people were explaining to them, we thought you were gone, da 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 da, and all that stuff. But I find that very interesting, because I firmly believe that, at least in some of the places I have lived, including my house right here, I believe that I have some type of a small portal here. And I bet there's portals everywhere. And then I hear that you can probably create a portal. But when we're making the association between, I hear this all the time, oh, there can't be a Bigfoot out there. There's no proof. No one has ever really shown me proof of one. And I always have to sit and debate. They look different. There is proof in some way, yada, yada, yada. But that they can also, I believe, maybe if you can disagree with me on this, I have always felt that they had a tendency to interdimensionally disappear and maybe transform into some type of blue orb is what I've been hearing the most of, in terms of, if you see blue orbs or something, there's probably a Bigfoot near. What are your thoughts on that? Because you guys have done extensive research on this. What do you know about that?
Could you speak a little more clear? Are you asking me what's my opinion of Bigfoot right now? Is mm-hmm. that what you're asking me?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they materialize,
mm-hmm.
if we want to think interdimensionally, for a period of time, and may have independent agency and may not. I'm not sure. But that's the reason why it would kind of explain why you get 3 or 4 footprints that start from nowhere and end up nowhere, which we've had multiple cases of that. I actually saw one a year and a half ago. We're at a prayer tree in Bailey, Colorado. And we were told through a series of synchronicities that this tree had magical powers for the Ute Indians. Mm-hmm. And we were at kind of a gathering of people, and I did a meditation. And I said, well, how many of you would like to go try and touch this tree and see if something happens for you, you know, move you, waken something up in you? And almost everybody did. And then my son-in-law and I went over there and said, let's try it.
Mm-hmm.
And my eyes were closed, and I opened them up, and there was a Bigfoot, which is more or less a shadow creature, behind him. And Alan was kind of fluctuating in and out of existence, in a kind of like in Star Trek when the transporter.
Yeah.
Kind of that effect. And finally I sat down, there's a creature behind you. And he said, I know. And he described how it came up behind him and everything like that. So, and then it was gone. The whole thing was gone. So that puts it in kind of a portal realm. So in your original question, I'm kind of fascinated with time slips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the alteration of time, which says in some way contradicts, you know, normal physics. Yes? You know, the progression that's determined from the Big Bang and so on, that
mm-hmm.
shows that that's not, can't be quite right if these other things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you want one example mm-hmm. that's in the book, or maybe it occurred after the book, but when we did the investigation of the Beast of Bray Road. Have you heard of that?
Yes, through you guys, but yes. Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of the best known cryptids that's not a Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a road in southeastern Wisconsin where it shows up, very short country road. And there's a farmer who bought a piece of section of land next to it, and he was getting the same phenomenon. And anyhow, we had good results there. And there was a Bigfooter, like I said, I needed people, you know, who had these experiences over a period of time. And after we did the walkthrough of the land and decided what we're going to do, we said, well, let's go into a small town and have some pizza. And then when it gets dark, we'll at least drive down the road in our vehicle, and I'll film out the windows we drive down. And we did all that. And then eventually, when the program was done, I sent them a private YouTube and said, "Here it is. What do you think?" And they both got back to me and said, "We heard ourselves talking in the car. We have no recollection of being in that car or going to have pizza or anything. So how's that possible?" And I asked Lee, the owner of the property, I said, "What do you make of it?" He said, "I thought I used to know what reality is, but I don't anymore." Mm-hmm. And when we were investigating Bradshaw, we had a profound time slip too. So for me, that's a pretty fascinating thing because it ties into the possibility of time travel and precognition and that whole phenomena, precognition, postcognition. Mm-hmm. And I think it's saying something about what reality really is that we don't normally allow ourselves, or our brain doesn't allow us to experience normally.
Yeah. I had interviewed a guest a long time ago. We talked a little bit about time slips. She had an experience, and what she said was, it was very weird. She said, I was coming out of the house or something, and this gentleman pulled up into the parking lot where she was, let's just say it's an apartment complex, in a very old-fashioned car. Very old-fashioned. We're talking probably 50s from the way she described it or so. And she thought, oh, there must be one of those. You know how they have these old car vintage shows that go on all the time and people are always running around with showing off their vehicles and all that. So she thought, oh, you know, that someone was lost or they're coming up to pick somebody up. She was on her way out and she walked past this person in this vehicle, and the guy rolled down the window. And he had asked her some very bizarre question. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something that wasn't even timely. It was something like something of the past, something around that era where that person would have had been just a general question and whatever. She thought, this is kind of odd. She just said, I don't know if I can really help you. And then, of course, she went on her merry way. And then for some reason, the car or whatever, it just kind of just disappeared or whatever. But she found it very strange how someone could ask a question that was not even time relevant and literally associated back to a time when she wasn't probably even born yet. And it was just the bizarrest thing. And it just never left her mind. But some of these things are interesting, and people do report on occasion that they've had a time slip. Not a lot of people, but those that are aware enough to know that something bizarre has happened to them have done so. So that's very fascinating. And portals are fascinating to me. I'm always afraid to go into a national park now because I'm afraid I might walk into something and not be able to come back out. But what are your impressions about this one? I think maybe you wrote about it in your book, the one that they just showed. The ability of Bigfoot to dissolve into a rock, you know, something like this rock, or just take transformation to disguise itself. Something about, you talked about this rock somewhere and something along the lines of something very mystical about it. Do you remember what I'm talking about? That's in your book in one of your chapters.
Remember anything like that, Mark?
Not precisely, but I think there's a larger question at play here, and that is the role that Bigfoot plays in any meeting with someone else.
Yes.
So why does a Bigfoot appear and suddenly disappear?
Yes.
There are a lot of different theories out there, and we've gone from Bigfoot is this big hairy ape creature swinging through the trees of the Pacific Northwest, scaring the Salish Indians, to an interdimensional creature, to a manifestation of an individual's thoughts.
Yeah.
So there's a whole gamut here. But I think there's a greater historical context, and I'm going to use an example, the Roman Emperor Constantine. So in 300 AD, he's facing a battle against another person who is trying to, another Roman who's trying to take over the empire. And he is visited by an angel carrying the it's either a cross or two letters, C, Chi, and Rho, which are the first two letters of Christ's name. And he has this profound change in his life. He has this profound change, and he becomes a Christian. And the whole empire becomes Christian at that point. After he decrees it and he wins his battle. But it makes sense that a person would see a creature, an angel, something that would speak to them on a level that would change who they are as an individual. Mm-hmm. Constantine goes from a very, very virtuous Roman, believing in all the Roman gods, to a monotheistic believer in Christianity, and changes the whole empire. So now let's come forward 1700 years into the present. The idea that there's a hairy creature running around the whether it's the Pacific Northwest or the forests of Ohio or Wisconsin, really isn't going to hold much water for many people. But blue orbs aside, because that you're right, that there's a lot of experience of people having blue orbs and then having this experience.
Right.
If your ego gets out of the way, if you're trying to constantly explain the world to yourself, in a practical manner, so that you can negotiate from your house to the 7-Eleven to buy a quart of milk. If that gets out of the way, what is going to manifest for you to give you an experience that will allow you to become a better person? It's not necessarily going to be a Bigfoot. It's not necessarily going to be an angel. It's not necessarily going to be Jesus Christ or Muhammad or the Buddha. But it's going to be some manifestation that suddenly opens you up to becoming a better person. How do you explain it? If you're in a religious community, you're going to explain it as a deity of some kind, perhaps. If you're not in a religious community, you're going to explain it some other way. So Bigfoot, I believe, is for me, is a more generic idea than an actual being that can transform into a rock or transform into a tree or something along those lines. It doesn't mean that Bigfoot doesn't exist or that there isn't interdimensional travel. Somehow this manifestation appears. And that brings me back to portals, which is why portals to me are so fascinating now. Does this manifestation come through a portal? Has its impact on an individual and then go away? And that individual thinks, oh, this manifestation turned into a rock, or it turned into a tree, or it was an angel, or what was this? I don't know the answer to that yet, but we're exploring it. And, you know, someday we may find the answer.
But you also bring up one very interesting point here, Mark.
Can I add one thing quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Do you know who Ray Hernandez is? So he wrote a blurb for our book, just to relate it back to the book. He was a devout atheist, scientific guy, mm-hmm. and he had a sick dog that was going to die. And he and his wife were sitting in their living room with it, and something appeared above them, and he saw an alien craft, she saw an angel. And the dog was healed.
Mm-hmm.
That totally changed his life. He's now become a huge paranormal researcher and gathering of all these accounts across all these different sort of things. So in some way, one of the nice things about Bigfoot is that it's good enough to get your attention, a little scary.
Yeah.
Not too scary. I mean, if it turned out to be a T-Rex instead of a Bigfoot that was getting ready to eat you, we probably wouldn't have the same impact. So, and the same with grays, you know, they're aliens, but they're kind of helpless. They're skinny little blue people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of like something's playing with us, a trickster type element there that makes it so that it's recognizable in some way. Not us, clearly, it's not just a human, but a little scary, but not too scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's carefully crafted to do just what it needs to do to say, there's something weird here.
Well, you know, I can add one story to that from on the account of a woman that I met and talked with also on my show, who actually came 2 inches away from a Bigfoot. I'll give that story very quickly here. So she was fascinated with UFOs, and I cannot recall where she was which state she was at the time, but she was chasing after what she thought were alien crafts. So she kind of did this for like a hobby or whatever. She went out after one after work one evening, and she saw this alien craft. So she started to follow it, and she ended up going on a back road in a very remote area with a lot of woods. And her car got a flat tire. And so once it got a flat tire, she was stuck out in the middle of nowhere. So she knew, and her cell phone, of course, was down to 10% on being able to try to contact somebody to come and help her. So she started walking down this road. She thought if she would get closer to the cell tower that she would have a stronger signal. She could call somebody and be able to come and help get her out of this situation. In the meantime, she realized she was in cougar country. And she knew that there was cougars in the area and was very terrified of the fact that she was going to be killed by one while she was trying to walk to get to this cell phone tower. She got very, very tired and very, very exhausted. So she decided to lay down on the road for a while. And then all of a sudden, she woke up when she heard something sniffing at her. And she thought, oh my God, I have a cougar sniffing at me and I'm going to die. And the only thing that I know to do with cougars is to get up, startle them, raise my hands up in the air, and try to scare them away from me so it's them or me. So she got up the nerve. And so what she did is she jumped up and she started doing the la kind of thing. And she was standing and came to realize that what was sniffing her was not a cougar, but it was a Bigfoot. And so when she stood up, literally in front of her, as God is her witness and my own, I didn't see it, but she told it very passionately. This thing was probably about 7 feet plus, 7.5 feet tall, very hairy, very smelly, very stinky, very whatever. She looked up at it and she heard the fear in her face was so terrifying that when it looked down at her, it kind of did the same thing. And it just, instead of touching her or anything with her, because I've heard of these Bigfoot actually picking up human beings, not to scare anybody, and bringing them off into, of course, the portal area where they disappear. But it turned and it ran off into this wooded area. It was a very compelling story. She will never back down. She wasn't hallucinating. She wasn't anything. Somehow she managed to get out of there. It was not a cougar, but she did say, I came face to face with one. But the thing that people always debate is, where are the hair samples? Why don't they have a lot of wood ticks on them if they're all running around out there? What about these teepees that they keep making all the time upside down, the roots that they turn upside down? There's so many people questioning it, but I agree with both of you 100%. Sometimes it's not about the element or the thing that is there. Sometimes it's about the invitation to an awakening within ourselves or whatever that brings us to another place of either our own understanding or a more openness about certain things that maybe we might have been closed-minded about before. But it's very, very fascinating how these things keep pushing us to want to either try to discover the truth or go after the truth or discover whatever we're trying to awaken to at this time. It's kind of fascinating, really. So as we come down to kind of a roaring close, I want you guys to bring up one more point about your book that I'd like people to really engage in and get about what you would like to talk about next, and then we'll come to our wrap-up.
Can I show you a picture? I'll try showing.
Sure.
Can you see that Bigfoot in there?
Hang on. Just hold still. I'm going to look. So...
shiny eyes.
I cannot at this time because my focus, like everybody else's, is going to be... I'm trying to... Where is it?
Well, this is a mirror image, so it shows up on my right side, but it might be your left.
Is it that big whitish blobbish area with the two eyes?
Yeah, it's kind of bluish.
Yeah, that one. Yes, yes, I see it.
So that's
I saw that right away. Yes, yes.
And I'll show you if I can. Here's the interdimensional portal. Can you see that?
Yep, hold still.
It's a black pyramid.
And then there's some, yes, it's a black pyramid like this. I see it.
We got a mass of orbs pouring out of it and going back into it.
Interesting. Is that is it just a black mass or is it an actual opening to some cave or mound?
No, it's on the property,
mm-hmm.
near buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's slightly translucent so you can see what's in back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right over the place we call high strangeness, where we had all the actions of a real portal, you know, the cold spot, the little thing inside, the hot thing, out of strange electromagnetic fluctuations. Mm-hmm. And we all got zapped there, because the theory is that when you're one of these portals, there's two physics, our physics and the physics of the interdimensional universe, the other universe. That when they get together, our biology doesn't care for them. And so we all kind of feel sort of nauseated and sick and so on. And so I asked the MUFON forensic guy, you know, what is that? And he looked at me and said, that's an interdimensional portal. And I said, say more. And he said, I can't. So our new book is going to cover what went on there, plus our interactions with not only Bigfoot, but alien intelligence, just that showed enormous awareness of what was going on. And it was recorded by electronic and put on a computer.
You know, that's really cool. Do you think portals have various sizes?
Sure seems like it.
Mm-hmm. I
don't think they're permanent, because it wasn't always there.
Yeah.
The guy who studied this thing and set up the electronics to verify what was going on. Said he was at the Sedona you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and he was tracking the portals there.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, that they come and go, and he was able to. They're magnetic.
Yeah.
And that, you know, magnet has this kind of arcing thing to it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the magnet's it's going down and up. And if you're in the up one, you're going to go to heaven and have a brilliant experience. If you're on the other end, you're going to feel like you're going to die.
Wow.
And he was able to document that.
Wow. Wow. Are you writing about that? Are you writing about that in your next book?
We are.
And when?
It's called The High Strangeness of Bradshaw Ranch.
Okay. And when is that due out?
Hey, Mark, when are we going to write it?
We'll probably start on it over the Christmas holidays. Probably be out by March or April.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the muses are favorable to us.
Yeah, oh, I know. The channeling. I think that you guys wrote beautifully in this one book here. Write it the same way. It's very easy read. I think people would really, they would enjoy it and find a lot of good, interesting stuff that comes out of that. And anyone who's involved or has an interest in paranormal cryptid type stuff, you know, Bigfoot particularly, or the connections between some of this stuff, I think they'll be, it's very beneficial and it really helps to open up the mind. So tell us a little bit. I think this was a very good interview tonight. Tell us a little bit about if people want to either get a hold of you or get a hold of your book, or if anything's coming up per se, how can they reach out or to find more of you?
Well, the book's available, on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. And there's a digital version in which the pictures will be in color.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we'll have the same result for the new book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have a lot of movies and series on the web, on Amazon, YouTube. It started out as the connection between Bigfoot and aliens, but now it's expanded to the whole ball of wax, including the Eastern meditation practices that I mentioned, and flow.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.